Welcome to TFL's Capital Connection, your insider source for the policy work and the ministry work going on at the Iowa Capitol. Now, today is a special edition. I say that, I think, just about every week, but that's just the reality, is that there's ever-changing things up at the Iowa Capitol, and the big change that happened this past week, that happened early in the morning, 4:30 a.m. on, Chuck, was it Saturday?
Saturday.
On Saturday was the legislative session, the 2024 legislative session has finally come to a close. And we can officially talk to you today about what bills have passed, what bills haven't passed. We even have a bit of a scorecard for you at home on how we did this year. And spoiler alert, it's good news. So I've got with me Chuck Hurley and Danny Carroll, both of our senior lobbyists down at the Iowa Capitol, family advocates, champions, these two veteran stalwarts who are known and respected and frankly, how should we say? What is
old.
They say? Old? No, I was going to say out punch their weight class. Is that fair to say? I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
So we're talking today about what has happened this year at the Iowa legislature and specifically, so who wants to break the news? Who wants to break the score?
Chuck, just let me get a little trivia.
Okay, trivia before the score.
In order to adjourn at 4 o'clock, they had to suspend the rules because they have a rule that says you can't vote between midnight and 8 a.m. Did you know that?
So the
first thing they did on Friday morning was suspend the rules, and everybody thought it's going to be a late night.
Yeah,
they just suspended Rule 75.
Yeah. Well, the night before they went to 2:30 a.m.
Yeah.
And so just for non-trivia history, Danny and I were at the Capitol in the 90s and Danny in the aughts as legislators, and we would on occasion go around the clock. I remember going around the clock twice. The nature of close down of session is bizarre, but nobody's come up with a better way of doing it. And that is there's always more ideas / bills / amendments that powerful lawmakers want to pass. And so to close a session, you have to say no to a lot. And the way you say no as a legislative leader is you wear people out. And it's just the way it is. So when people have asked me literally for the last 30-some years, well, when's session going to be over? The only true answer is when somebody blinks, when somebody gives up on something they passionately care about. Well, Danny and I and Ryan did not give up on baby Olivia or on protecting kids online, but the session had to close, and unfortunately, those two lost. The other 11 bills that we worked really hard on that passed, we're just thrilled about. So, you know, it's always a mixed bag. This year was a good session. I don't know if I would quite describe it as an A-plus great session like we've had, but compared to 34 years ago and for 26 years following, when we were in the desert and we were just fighting to kill bad bills, we pass good bills now. The last 8 years have just been an oasis.
Yeah, if you were listening carefully there, you heard Chuck give out the spoiler on what our score is. But a little bit of perspective, because Chuck, you were also giving it. Every year, when people ask, why can't we just get this bill passed? Why can't government just get this thing done? What you hinted at there was every year, there's not just dozens, there's well over 1,000 typical year bills that get proposed. And by the end of session, basically, there is this, we just have to say no to so many of them, only so much time, only so much ability to responsibly and well govern these laws. We're not doing it willy-nilly. Only so many, which means many, many bills just get said no to.
And the harsh reality is issues keep coming up every year, and that's why we keep fighting. That's why TFL is now in its 27th year. We will need to try to elect really good ministers of God this fall, and we will need to come back in January of 2025 and continue to try to pass laws that are necessary. Just one example on our win list, artificial intelligence, deep fake porn. You know, we didn't deal with that when Danny and I were in the legislature in the 90s.
Yeah.
but now we have to deal with it. So every year there's more things that we need to do. There's a great video out there that we've talked about in past podcasts that we think should be shown to every school child. You know, that didn't pass, but we're going to be back in January of 2025, Lord willing, and we're going to try to get that passed. So,
all right. So along those lines, let me just take a moment before we get into the nitty gritty of the score, a quick commercial, but it's not a commercial for a product we want you to buy. It's an idea you need to understand. We have an election coming up in November. And one of the top stories on the Drudge Report early this week was that many Americans are unenthused about the two names at the top of the ticket, Joe Biden, Donald Trump. Some are like him, some don't. But the stats show a lot of people don't like that rematch. And so there's a real lack of enthusiasm over this November's election. What a tremendous, tremendous mistake it would be to bury this talent, if to use a biblical phrase, this gift that you've been given by God, the ability to vote for our leaders, to bury that in the sand because you're disillusioned by the two at the top of the ticket. The reality is, even if you don't like those, even if you don't even bother voting for president, I'm not encouraging you to do that, but even if you don't, the other names on the ticket, down further, who is going to represent you at your state government?
Bingo.
Who is going to make these, determine what kind of state and neighborhood you live in? Those names are on the ticket. Voting this year, I would argue, especially with probably a lower turnout because what's at the top of the ticket, is more important than ever. Your vote carries more weight than ever in this year's election in November. Don't let disillusionment with the names at the top of the ticket stop you from going and making sure you vote.
Bingo. A great example, Drew, thank you for saying that, is we think we're about one vote short on baby Olivia in the Senate. Well, I know a guy from my church who's a really strong Christian who's running for Iowa Senate. And so if he were elected, he could make the difference next year. So thank you for making that pitch. People don't check out just because you don't like the top of the ticket.
Very good. Thank you, Chuck. Let's go back to the scorecard then as we take a look at it. Mentioned earlier, there's thousands of bills that get proposed every year. There were dozens of bills that the family leader registered in support of, but the writing was on the wall pretty early. Maybe they didn't make it through first funnel. Maybe they didn't make it through second funnel. Those were bills that were never really going to see the light of the day. Similarly, there were dozens of bad bills that had to be fought against, that had to be said, no, we're not doing euthanasia, doctor-assisted suicide in Iowa. No, we're not making homeschooling illegal in Iowa. No, we're not doing that. So dozens of bills that we fought against, and this year I'm hearing on those bad bills, we scored 100%. We didn't see any of the bills
that's
that
where it makes
fought
a difference who you elect.
Yes.
By what they get done, but what they keep from happening.
Keep from happening. And so just like any good sports team, if you've got a defense, or say in baseball, you've got a guy that throws nothing but heat, strikes out every batter, you know, that's pretty good. So yeah, we are praising God for the good people that God has sent to the legislature. And, you know, we've grown accustomed to our friends killing all these bad bills. Every once in a while, we have to testify against something. But most of the time, it's because we've helped get some good people elected. God's raised up good people. And it's such a blessing to see all these really, really bad ideas, like abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy, put in our Constitution. That was introduced in Iowa. That's passing in other states. In Iowa, no way, Jose, right now.
And that bill was sponsored by every single Democrat in the Iowa House signed onto that bill.
And so if you don't vote this November, you are ushering in, or potentially ushering in, a flip to the dark side.
Yeah, to go back to the baseball analogy, if that's the batter who's up to the plate, you don't want to throw a bad pitch because you weren't paying attention. You don't want to issue a walk and put that one on base. So who we elect in November makes all the difference. We need to be, if I can use, again, baseball analogy, some of you will get, we need to make sure we've got Mariano Rivera's in there, making sure there's no hits in the ninth inning so that doesn't happen. But So with 100% of those bad bills killed this year, for which we praise God, and dozens of bills pro and against, there were 13 bills that essentially came down to the wire or came to decision time that we were working diligently on, the family leader. And we are very pleased to report, you heard Chuck kind of spoil this earlier, but very pleased to report that our record on those bills was 11-2. 11 wins, two bills that we wanted to see get passed that unfortunately did not make it. Not bad bills, mind you, just good bills that didn't get there. Still, 11-2, getting 11 bills passed, we would argue, is fantastic news. So I'm going to run through that list. We'll talk about a couple of them. Let's talk right away about the 11 wins. The big one, of course, the grand slam, if we're going to keep up with the baseball analogy, the grand slam was Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA. We have talked about this bill over and over again. Excited about this bill. It has been over a dozen years in the working where religious freedom can finally get its day in court, and the government will not be able to simply squash a religious freedom claim, the religious freedom of Iowans, regardless of what religion you are, without you having the opportunity to get your say in court, and the state will have a significant test they have to pass.
Some of you may have been at our Family Champions dinner. If not, I would encourage you to go or get a hold of me, and we'll update you on what happened there. There were some great speeches given, some great details given. We can't do all that on the podcast. But suffice it to say for right now, in 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court did a bad thing. And now 26 states have rectified that. We became the 27th, I believe. And so religious freedom is now in Iowa back to its exalted status that our founders had in mind. That is a fundamental constitutional right that can't just be taken away by government. The religious dissenter gets his or her day in court, and with a very high standard for the government to prove that they can squash somebody's religious conscience.
For most of you, what that means is when you were young and you learned what the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was all about, when you learned about this idea that we have a freedom of religion, that has been restored.
Yes.
It was stripped away in many respects in 1990, but at a federal level and now in Iowa at the state level, that has been restored. That is a grand slam victory for the family leader and for you this year. Other wins this year, I'm going to kind of rattle through these, then we'll come back to them, guys. All right. Victory number two, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, right? Is that what it is? DEI in our universities scored a victory there in terms of reducing the influence of these heavily leftist ideas in our state universities. I have here number three, right of first refusal. This has to do with school buildings, right?
Yeah, school choice is now a real thing in a big way in Iowa.
We've got to practically figure out how we would make it work.
Yeah, however, there are some public schools that don't want to sell to a competitor, even though they're closing or even talking about tearing down the school. So this gives a private school the chance to bid.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a sort of a strange thing, and I don't want to linger on this bill, but you got it just a little bit to explain it. There are school buildings that the public paid for that a private school could use if the public school isn't going to use it anymore. But we've seen scenarios where public schools are saying, no, we don't want to let a private school use that. We'd rather tear it down than sell it to you.
That was an actual case in one city in Iowa. I won't say the town, but mm-hmm. High school was ready to tear it down rather than sell it to a private school.
Mm-hmm. So in the efforts to just continue to give more school choice to parents and families, a bill was passed to just make that process more fair. Continuing on, you've heard of the Moms Bill, more options for maternal support. We've had to make some changes to the law so that can get administered better and actually executed and off the ground well, that money spent well to support moms in need. Made a change to the law there.
I want to say something real quick on moms. The governor has led on this. Legislators are leading on this. The pro-life community is leading on this, saying we want to help moms in trouble. Mm-hmm. And it's just the right thing to do to provide more resources for a mom in a tough spot. And it's just really neat to see legislators and the governor championing helping moms. This isn't anti-abortion. It's genuinely pro-life and
pro-mom, pro-baby.
Pro-mom. And so it's just a beautiful thing to see. And we got an improvement on that this year. It was a great bill.
And then to add to that, the next one on your list, Drew, is postpartum care. Up until this law came into effect, if a mom was on Medicaid, she would get care from Medicaid for 60 days after delivery. And now with this change in the law, she'll qualify for a full year of postpartum care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as Danny mentioned, moms wasn't the only one. We got actually three different bills helping moms. So the Medicaid extension that Danny talked about, but also some issues with zoning and homes that help women in crisis pregnancies and maternity. So three bills helping moms, helping these young families. We've got another bill. We'll get back to this one, Chuck. I know you want to talk about this one, but a repeal of gender balance requirements in government boards and commissions. Two bills that were passed dealing with, and you mentioned this earlier, the whole world of artificial intelligence being used to extort or blackmail people with pornography, depicting minors with artificial intelligence in pornography. Crazy stuff, but two different bills that were passed to block these, honestly, wicked practices. Then we have a bill that was passed that would basically clarify that counties can give tax dollars to religious institutions for public purposes. That, of course, has kind of always been the case, but we needed a law to clarify against some challenges that can, in fact, happen. And then another issue, we talked about school choice and so forth, open enrollment, transportation regarding buses crossing certain lines, etc. All 11 of those we count as victories, but I won't go away, Chuck, before we go back to that one, repealing gender balance requirements. Chuck, what's the story behind this one?
This was an interesting debate at the Capitol this year, but in the midst of the debate, in January of this year, I had the privilege of being a plaintiff in a federal lawsuit in Iowa that we won. And this was in front of a liberal judge. And the liberal judge agreed with us that the U.S. Constitution does not allow gender to be used in applying for a board or a commission. So let me give you a specific example. Last year, Kathy Law, a really sharp lady, applied to be on the Judicial Nominating Commission. Because she wasn't a male, she couldn't apply. She couldn't even apply.
That's essentially a quota that was dropped.
That's crazy. Well, this year, I applied or will be applying this year for that same commission. Because I'm not a female, I can't even apply. So we worked that case through the courts. We won in January. And then in February, I testified several times in subcommittee saying, I think we better change the state law to conform to the U.S. Constitution. And thank God our legislators and our governor got it. But you would not believe the opposition to trying to conform our state law to the U.S. Constitution because, you know, we hate women or whatever. And we gave the case of Kathy Law where, no, you really do hate women if you don't allow Kathy Law to serve because she's not a man. So anyway, we won that battle. It was a fun win. It was the right win. And it was really neat to see the governor, who's a female, and to see the floor managers, who were female, and others say, look, we have a lot of very qualified Iowans for a lot of these boards and commissions. Let's don't be shutting out half of them who are the, quote, wrong gender, unquote. So good win for better government.
Exactly. Good government. That's 11 wins on the tally sheet here. We do need to talk real quickly about the two losses because you've been following us all along. So we've been championing and praying for the Baby Olivia bill. Unfortunately, Baby Olivia bill was not passed this year. There's an opportunity to pass it next year. There's always an opportunity to pass it next year if, as we talked about earlier, if, to be honest, you elect the right people. Right. Another loss for us this year was efforts to bring some protection for children and families when it comes to online pornography use. We're told that basically kind of ran out of time to get that passed this year. We need to make it a priority next year and next year and whatever it takes to get that passed as well. But overall, reporting 11-2, I will certainly take that. Before we go, however, I want to talk about one more issue that came up at the legislature this year. One more issue that was not something that we were at the Family Leader registering for or against, but it's a matter of education and understanding what's going on and why this is important, because it really does impact you in more ways than you might realize. For that, I'm going to turn over to Danny to talk to us a little bit about the issue of how we are or aren't paying our legislators.
My last session, Drew, was 2006. That will soon be 20 years. 18 years ago. That was the last time I voted for it. That was the last time a salary was increased for the House of Representatives or the Senate. And that was increased to $25,000. Now, I never received that, because the way they do that is you vote on it like in that case, 2006, but it doesn't take effect until 2007. So you have to go home and run a campaign.
Yeah, you don't get to raise your own salary.
You don't get to raise your own. Yeah. You have to go back and run for it. And that's the way it was this year. The House passed it and the Senate killed it. And it's really discouraging a lot of people from running for the legislature. They simply cannot afford to take that much time off for work for a $25,000 salary that has been increased in 17 or 18 years.
Yeah, you've seen the price of gasoline go up. You've seen the price of groceries go up. Yeah. But what we're paying our legislators hasn't gone up since 2006?
What the public doesn't realize is you think that we're saving money and that serving in the legislature should be volunteer.
I don't know anybody who just offhand wants to increase legislators' salaries until you understand the consequences.
So if you think, well, it ought to be basically volunteer. Okay. You know who's going to volunteer, Drew? Wealthy people.
Yeah.
If you want the independently wealthy, retired on a pension, fill in the blank, then, keep those salaries low. Because the average guy on the street can't take that much time off from work.
I can't. I've had people ask me about running.
We either get good ones. I think Phil Thompson's probably a result this year. A good young legislator can't afford to serve any longer. And there were probably four or five others that I'm personally aware of that seriously thought about leaving office, because they've got families to raise and bills to pay.
A lot of these legislators are sharp people. They're hard workers.
Yeah.
And they could make
the people you want.
They could make 5 to 15 times as much in the private sector.
Yeah. Well, I know that here at the Family Leader, we talk about raising up ministers of God to serve in office. People who understand their role as a shepherd to raise up and to serve in office. And a lot of times it's encouraging to see the young voices. It's encouraging to see a family man. It's encouraging to see people, regardless of where they serve, where they're at on the income ladder, to be able to serve, to be able to speak into our government, to be able to lead. But if they can't afford to be there, great young leaders get forced to walk away. And the only people that get to serve there are, if I can be, are the rich old fat cats. And I know that no matter who you are out there, you left, right, rich old fat cats in the legislature is not what we're after. We want principled people. We want citizens leading, but we have to make it possible for them to do so. So next time you hear the discussion or the debate about raising salary for our legislators, understand the real consequences of keeping that number ridiculously low.
The bill was to raise it from 25 to 35,000. That was the bill that failed.
I think you could easily argue that's nowhere near enough.
Yeah.
Well, until next time, thank you so much for listening to this episode, indeed this season of the Family Leaders Capital Connection. We will update you periodically throughout the year going forward as events break. Make sure that you're looking forward to the results of the Iowa State Supreme Court case on Iowa's heartbeat law and more coming in through the rest of this year. Until we talk to you next time, thank you for listening to TFL's Capital Connection.
This podcast is a project of the Family Leader and the Family Leader Foundation and is only possible through the generous support of our donors. If you would like to partner with us in our work, please visit thefamilyleader.com/give.